Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock. Shubangi, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Hi.
Shubangi, will you tell, first of all, you're a student nurse, I understand.
No, I'm a medical student.
You're a medical student.
Yeah.
But you were doing placements in some Dublin hospitals.
In the Coombe, yeah. Well, I do placements all around the Trinity Hospital, yes, but I was in the Coombe.
You were walking back from the Coombe on Monday evening.
Yes,
on Monday evening. So tell us what happened.
I was walking towards James Hospital, towards the Lewis stop, with a friend after placement. And around the Reuben Street area in Dolphin's Barn, I had a group of about six or seven youths who were just like dressed in khakis walking past. And it was getting a bit dark, so I was walking with a friend. About three of them passed by, and then the fourth, I think, said what I heard later was a slur, but I couldn't hear all of it because he basically rammed into me with like the full force of his body and his shoulder. These are all like 5'8" lads, and I'm only about 5'4", and my friend's 5'5", so we weren't like able to intervene or anything. But yeah, I heard something being said, but most of it was just being rammed with a shoulder in like my ear and my jaw and my neck. And then they kept laughing and saying things and walked away like nothing happened.
And when you say kept laughing and saying things, what kind of things were they saying that you could make out?
At that point, as I say, because I was like hit hard enough that my ear was ringing and I couldn't hear anything, like I wouldn't have been able to tell, but my friend who was walking with me basically turned around and confronted them on the racism. Or like called them out for being racist. So I surmised that like slurs had been exchanged.
You said you later learned what had been said initially before or as you were being shouldered out of the way or rammed.
Yeah.
What did you hear had been said?
Just, let's just say, disparaging references to race. Like, I would really rather not repeat slurs. I don't think it helps anybody.
You have a British accent to my ear, Shubangi. Where do you actually come from?
So I was born in India, and then I grew up in Europe for a little bit, and then I moved to Britain when I was about 10. And then I moved here about 5 years ago.
And have you had issues or incidents, racist incidents in the past?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, this was exactly, like, I mean, I've had an unfortunate number of them in the last year. I've definitely seen them increasing in the last year, like, compared to, say, what it was like in, like, 2015 to 2016 and so on. But, like, one of the worst ones was New Year's Eve 2018 going on 2019. I was, like, coming back after getting some shopping for making dinner for my friends and loved ones. And I got stopped on Jervis Lewis stop and asked to take my headphones off. And I assumed someone was asking for directions. And then this woman started clawing at my face, like just actually with her nails, clawing at my face, just saying, you know, shave your face off. Do you know you look like a monkey? Shave your face off, monkey man. You know, when you shave your armpits, like physically gesturing at my body, like, yeah, you should probably consider shaving off your face as well. So, yeah. This is why I don't like dwelling.
Absolutely, understandably. But how did you react to that? How do you react to that?
You just get stunned. And I think the worst part is that, like, you look around sometimes to see if there's anyone who will help. And all you see is, like, people who are either not saying anything, backing away, which is an understandable response when you see violence, or like smiling quietly along to it. And that just is absolutely gutting. I don't know, like you just
at least what I've done is just like try and move away into a safe position. Like I was really lucky, forgiven values of luck, that when that happened, I was able to just get on a Lewis and move on, or like at least get away from that space. But I don't know, that woman could have easily got on with me. Or like even at this time, I just had to kind of keep walking, even though like my ear was ringing and I couldn't really move my jaw or my neck. And my friend was there, so at least like walked me down to the Lewis stuff, but there was so little to do.
Shubhangi, I'm just concerned that we're not getting your story very clearly there, because the line is breaking down a little bit. If you can hang on, we might try and get you on a clearer line, because I do want to hear more of the detail and just go into to, you know, how you are responding and how you can respond to appalling incidents, absolutely appalling. I'd move on because I've got Aman on the line. Good afternoon, Aman.
Hi there, how are you?
Aman, you're a lecturer, a senior lecturer in UCC down in the second city, or some would say the first city. Will you tell us why you have taken to locking yourself into your office?
I moved to Cork in 2015. I do what I do best: teach, get people to think critically, and I'm quite vocal on those issues because I'm a bridge builder at the core. I started on Twitter, and I just began to receive all sorts of abuse, and I started receiving threatening calls.
Just to establish you, that's obviously a Scottish accent I'm hearing there, but. What you're lecturing in Islam, in what's your area of expertise?
I teach contemporary Islam, and I'm from Glasgow. Yeah, right. My parents are Pakistani. So again, but you know, it goes back to what I was listening to earlier with the previous caller, was that, you know, racists and people who don't like people who don't sit in neat boxes. So I don't sit in a neat box. You know, I may look brown, I look like a Pakistani man, but you know, I've got a Scottish accent. So it's very confusing to bigots, really. And I think part of that has kind of led to people getting very angry, leaving me threatening voice messages in my office phone. And like you said, I have actually got to the stage where I lock myself in my office now.
Okay, when you say threatening messages on in your voicemail, what are we talking about?
Well, the worst of it came in August last year, where somebody left a message and said that I should be executed. And that was really... You know, I was quite afraid. I have taken a strong stance to call it out, but it has left me feeling quite vulnerable. I actually do lock my office door, you know, ever since that happened, because universities are a public space, and so they should be. But
you really do feel physically threatened by those messages?
I do. I mean, when somebody says that I should be executed, there's no other way to kind of... I don't know what other way I could read into it. So it does leave me quite vulnerable. And I think the psychology behind this is to try to scare me, to try to get me to go offline and try to get me... But I won't, because I really do believe that part of my duty as an educator, as somebody who gets funded to teach at a university through public funds, is to engage the public square, and I will continue to do that. Well, there's a certain group of people who don't want me to do that, and I just think that's really unfortunate.
Shubhangi was saying to us there, that's our previous caller, that she has noticed that the level of racism that she's encountering has increased significantly over the last year. Have you a sense that there has been a shift or a change?
I think so. I really feel that there is a big shift. I think Ireland is really at the crossroads now, and I'm an optimist. I'm a bridge builder, and I think I try to find something positive. But I think there's so much discussion about diversity and inclusion, and it's brilliant, but it's scaring the living daylights out of the loonies. And I think the loonies are getting emboldened. Their racism is a lot more, they're speaking with a lot more clarity, and it's quite scary. But what we need to do, I think, is we just need to keep countering it. And I think there is a vast majority of people in this country, here in Cork, that I find, who stand shoulder to shoulder with me. And I think that is what we need to keep raising the platform to.
And again, Shubhangi was saying that she's obviously encountered, she just those two incidents that she was telling us about, which were really very distressing and in one case, very scary and physically, you know, a physical attack like that. Would have you ever been faced with that level of abuse?
I mean, it's very hard to kind of, because I think people are a lot more sophisticated in their racism these days. Like, you know, it's not like the kind of racism that my parents probably got when they came to the UK in the 60s is probably different. So, you know, I have received, when I was in Cork once, I had a guy and you know, I really do think he was just really drunk. And he said, you know, you're taking our jobs. How dare you come here? But that was part of the same kind of rhetoric and discussion that people are, you know, the threats that I was getting. How dare you, as a Paki, come and teach us here at UCC and, you know, go away wherever you come from. And so that's part of the whole kind of, you know, way that these people kind of spew this hatred.
Compared to Glasgow, how would you compare? I'm not saying Cork in particular, but Irish people in particular, are we, you know, the same, more or less inclined to, you know, go for that racist abuse than what you would have been encountering at home in Glasgow?
You know, what the way I compare it is that when I'm in Glasgow, I know there are a lot of people who look like me. You know, I recently had a very good, you know, supportive tweet from the Justice Minister of Scotland, who's same ethnic origin as me, Hamza Youssef. He's Pakistani, he's Scottish. So in Scotland, I don't feel that afraid. I feel a little bit more vulnerable here. I feel a little bit, you know, that are there people who look like me in Cork? Is there a network? And I don't have that. You know, I feel, and that's not a criticism, because I think things are changing and they're rapidly changing in Ireland. But I really worry about how appealing this will be. So many of my friends say to me nearly every day, what on earth are you doing in Cork? You don't need to be there. You know, you can be anywhere else. But I love Cork. Cork is a great city and it's been really, really good to me. It's just, you know, balancing it out with all of this. And it takes one thing, you know, it takes one little microaggression or a statement or that really leaves you quite afraid, worried, you know. And I don't like, and for me or anybody else, for a person of colour, for a black person, I just think, what are we doing, you know, as individuals to strengthen our society?
But I have this image of you now, a man in Cork, in your office, locking the door behind you, sitting in a locked office. I mean, is that a sustainable way to live and to work?
I don't know. I think about this every day. But, you know, I'm the type of person, I initially started as a high school teacher. I love engaging with my students. I love having my door open, getting students to come in and talking to them. I can't do that. But, you know, I really do think that I have to think about my safety. Anybody could walk in, you know, and I'm in a corridor. So for me, it's about that. But I still feel strong because I get so much support, you know, that it leaves me quite strong. But I have to be cautious. I have to be careful.
Indeed. Will you stay with us, Aman? Because I think we've got Shubhangi back on a better line, hopefully. Shubhangi, are you hearing me now?
Yep. Yes, I can. Yeah.
Oh, that is, I'm glad to say, a much clearer line.
Super.
Again, we were talking about this particular incident, which happened was last Monday night, wasn't it?
Yes, this was Monday night. Yeah.
That was, it seems to me, an extremely scary situation to have found yourself in.
I mean, yeah, it really is. Funnily enough, I was just coming back from my own, like, counselling services when I was taking the call. So it's actually one of those things that, more because it's affected me physically, I think it stuck with me in a lot more visceral way, because, like, every morning I wake up now and I can't hear quite right in my right ear. Like, the pain kind of changes, the discomfort kind of changes, but I know I can't hear right. I can't perceive the world quite the same way. So it's like a constant reminder.
Well, I know you're a medical student yourself, but have you had it seen too? Have you?
I'm waiting to go see a GP this evening because, like, obviously life is busy and these things get out in the way, but, like, you do actually have to keep doing things. So, like, the easiest, and obviously everyone else is busy as well, so I've been really lucky that someone offered to check me over, but now it's just a matter of having found
this evening to actually have time to go see them.
And tell me, so this was when you were walking home from your placement in the Coombe on Monday?
Yeah, I was just walking towards the Lewis stop, yeah.
So where that's down in some...
It's the Fatima Lewis stop behind James's.
Right. And yeah. What time of the evening would it have been?
It was around 5 or 5.15.
So, you know, okay, dark because of the time of year, but not late.
It actually wasn't dark. Like, there was still, like, sunlight. Like, the lights weren't all on. It was actually, like, reasonably well lit.
So, as you say, even at this time of the day, tea time even, that these, and there was four young men involved in this, as you
I
recall.
Mean, I think there's about six or seven, as I said. Like, it's just that three of them passed me by before, like, the fourth one actually hit me.
Right.
Yeah.
And your sense was that they were all kind of together in this, that they had been talking about it, laughing about it.
I mean, like, they were all laughing about it after, and, like, they were all, like, chatting all together coming up. So I don't, like, I would never... To be fair, I don't like ascribing motivations to, like, people who don't do the thing. So I don't want to say that, like, you know, all of them planned it. But certainly they were all laughing about it quite happily afterwards, walking away.
And certainly none of them came to your aid.
No. The only people who came up afterwards to me and my friend were this mixed race couple who were walking behind us. And, like, they came up, and I was obviously startled, and, like, I couldn't even hear right or anything. So when they first approached me, I was like, please God, not again. But no, the fellow just came up to me and was like, you know, I'm really sorry that happened to you. No one should have to go through that. And obviously, like, you can't do very much in that moment, but even that reassurance or acknowledgement was so valued.
Did you contact the Gardaí about this?
Yeah, I actually did. I mean, I was initially considering not, just because of how hopeless I felt, and, like, you know, you don't want to bring up something awful that happens again and again to yourself. Like, already I've had to tell this to people like 20, 30 times for various statements and things. But yeah, I did. I went and reported it over at Kevin Street.
And what's the reaction when you bring a story like this to the...
I mean, I have to say, like, the actual, like, Garda who took my report, she's a very, very compassionate person. And, like, she, like, even though it's technically not their jurisdiction, apparently, like, that's Kilmainham's, like, she, to be fair, saw the state I was in, just bawling my eyes out, was like, no, at least I'll do you, like, I'll take the statement from you here and I will follow it up so you don't have to go tell the story again. But even then, like, when they were writing it down, it was like, yeah, you know, we'll have to file this as minor assault. And, like, we don't know if we'll be able to, like, file it with, like, race motive or intention or not, just because apparently, like, the ways they have to report that are, like, really restrictive. And that was really upsetting, because obviously if we don't have the data for stuff like this, for cases like these noted somewhere, then for all intents and purposes, on, like, their own statistics, it'll be like, oh yeah, hate crime doesn't happen, but, like, the physical victims of it are still there.
Yeah, if you don't count it, it's not there. That's
exactly. And when I was talking to, like, after just, like, bringing it up on my socials and stuff, when I was talking to people, they said that, like, at least, if not the same, at least a very similar, like, number and group of people had been in the area recently assaulting other people of colour. And, you know, I suppose I am quite lucky that I do have a certain degree of platform that I feel safe even talking about it. Or at least that, you know, even if there's a lot of people who don't believe it, there'll probably be more that do. But if it never gets reported and never gets filed, then it feels really redundant and scary.
And scary. And would you have friends from other international backgrounds that would have had similar experiences, Shubhangi?
I mean, yeah, like, I would. Okay, I'm not going to go so far as to say all of us, but a significant proportion of people who are here from international or migrant backgrounds do, or at least in my company, I don't want to speak for anybody else, have experienced at least some degree of, like, hate crime or hate speech. And yeah, it's really disheartening. Like, from anything from, like, professional contacts I meet to personal friends to like my closest friends who are like from various international backgrounds, it's really sad to see like the many different ways in which it can manifest as well.
And yeah, there was certainly a debate, I know, in the UK over the course of that very divisive Brexit campaign and
yeah.
what happened, that it did embolden these certainly in the online and the social
yeah.
media platforms, and that racism grew as there was a spike in these sort of incidents and attacks.
Yeah.
Did you have any sense that has spilled over into Ireland?
I mean, see, I moved to Ireland the year before Brexit, and so I've seen at least Britain, like, going home whenever I do or keeping in touch with it, I've seen it become much more racist. But, like, the Ireland now that exists and the, like, atmosphere that exists is definitely not the same country that I moved to 5 years ago. And you would hope that that was from positive change. And in a lot of things, you know, a lot of good things have happened. But at least in this particular thing, it is deeply worrying how much more people are being misinformed and disinformed about these things. Like the fact that things go unsaid, things don't go reported. They're being misinformed and then disinformed and then also radicalized against, like, pretty much anyone who looks different to them. And it's a real shame.
Shubhangi, are you saying that in the 5 years that you've lived here, that you think Ireland is a more racist place now than it was when you first moved here?
I think that's a very narrow and polarizing statement for what's been a very multifaceted change. I don't even think that it's true. I don't think that, like, places become more racist in, like, 5 years. It's a very short time span, but I do think the people...
No, I mean your sense of the way you're interacting with...
I do think that the people who do hold those sentiments have become more emboldened to say them and to act on them with a physical consequence. I mean, I've gone from, you know, none of these experiences in, like, till maybe, like, 2016, 2017, to hearing words, to having people, like, touch at me, to having people injure me. So in my personal experience, it's very difficult not to see the direct outcome of people being more emboldened to share toxic views that they have, even if, like, the country as a whole may or may not be more or less racist, but people feel more able to say those things and do those things.
Yeah, your own personal, the trajectory of that arc there is something that's your personal experience for sure.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, Aman, you've been here 5 years as well, Aman?
Yeah, this is my fifth year, yeah.
What's your sense in those 5 years? Would it reflect Shubhangi's experience or...
I really think that the Ireland is going through you know, dramatic changes. And, you know, even when I first arrived, you know, and I would walk around campus here at UCC, I wouldn't really see that many, you know, black or brown faces. And now I get so excited and happy because the diversity has changed so much. But I think, you know, as Shubhangi is saying, what that means is it's actually making people kind of come out now and say these really hateful things and they're more emboldened. And I think if you look at the kind of politics that's kind of sweeping around in Europe, people say things that in the past they didn't, you know, they weren't able to. They just wouldn't say it. But now it just seems, you know, some of the stuff you read and it just really worries me. But again, I think for me, I'm very privileged because I'm at the university and you know, the university protects me. I really worry about, you know, people on the street. I mean, I'm on the street, but I still have a lot of privilege. Do you know what I mean? And so that really worries me to a certain degree.
Yeah, the people that wouldn't have your platform or your,
yeah,
as you say, your
exactly.
privilege would be a lot
yeah.
more vulnerable to this.
Yeah. Or, you know, even people who can't speak. You know, I often think about when my mum came to the UK, my mum is actually illiterate. She came from a poor village in Pakistan. And, you know, sometimes I think, how did my mum actually counter any kind of, you know, abuse, verbal abuse? So I worry, like, you know, to articulate in English is such a big privilege. But people who can't do that,
that I don't know how they must feel. And I always think about my mum, who still looks at images on her envelope that comes through the post to try to make sense because she can't read it. And I think, gosh, you're going through all of that and then you're trying to make a place your home. But, you know, it's different, I think, for me, because at least I can respond. I can shout. I can respond to it. But it's so complicated. I just
but you are, but you're still locking the door of your office, Saman.
I know, but at the end of the day, I still feel privileged. I still feel that, you know, I still have some power. I still have something that I can actually, you know, get up and do. I'm vulnerable, but at the same time, I'm also empowered. You know, it's a very, very tricky kind of situation to explain. But if you don't have hope, if you don't have this strength, gosh, I don't know what would happen to any of us that get this kind of abuse.
Okay. Well, on that hopeful note, I will take a break. 5 on 551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Or email joe@rte.ie. Sinead Sheehan, good afternoon to you.
Hi there.
Sinead, you were listening to our earlier discussion with Aman and Shubhangi about racist incidents that they were confronted with.
That's right, yeah.
Tell me your story.
I am of mixed ethnicity as well. I was born in Ireland 42 years ago, so I kind of seen the different ebbs and flows of the racism, you know, and anti-racism, and, you know, I've experienced kind of effects of, yeah, anti-racist campaigns with AIDS at school, and I was grew up in the north side of Dublin. And but, you know, so they helped out when they saw that there were, you know, kids saying things to me.
And would you have been one of the only children of mixed ethnic backgrounds in school, say?
Yeah, well, I went to quite a big school. I think there were 500 of us or something. And yeah, I think there were three kids who were not white.
In the whole school?
Yeah, everyone thought we were brothers and sisters. So you kind of, when you're younger, you know, I think kids can learn a lot, you know, by having exposure. So, you know, we were able to tell them where to go when you're that young. So it's different now, you know, you can have different conversations as you grow older with people. But, you know, I would have experienced just, you know, people's attitudes towards people who are not white in Ireland, you know, over the years.
And has it changed over the years? Like, you, as you say, it doesn't sound like it was too traumatic for you as a young child. Am I right there?
It wasn't traumatic. No, I wouldn't describe it as traumatic. Obviously, most people don't take any notice because you're just one of the kids. But people, when people don't know you or something, you know, I mean, people used to call us nigger and stuff, you know.
Where are your parents from, actually, Sinead?
Well, I was adopted. So my biological father is Indian. My biological mother is Irish. And I kind of made out to the other kids like I was Indian. And I knew how to show bows and arrows stuff because I didn't know what that meant either when I was younger. Because I was adopted by white Irish people. My dad was from Tralee and my mum's from Skeaton, County Limerick. So it's been very confusing for people to get their head around this kind of brown person holding hands with a white parent. So, you know, would have had maybe an unusual experience as a child in terms of experienced by other people.
Half Indian ethnic background, people actually called you a nigger? They used the N-word?
That's right. Well, they didn't really know what it was. These are kids, you know. These are just kids using words. You know, you might have called someone else in the class, might have been Four Eyes, you know. Mm. They're just trying to, you know, the way, I wouldn't have been anything too serious. But at the same time, I still remember the poem that they taught everyone in the class called The Colour of Your Skin. So, you know, they did at school, I think that's what they need to be doing is, you know, those kind of anti-racist campaigns where you just talk about it and bring it up and name it if it's brought up by other people. So, yeah, that helps a lot. It helped me a lot.
And talking to Shubhangi there and Aman, that they have noticed a kind of a shift in the rhetoric that's around about race and racism in recent years. And obviously Shubhangi has had very horrific personal experiences and incidents that she recounted to us. Have you had any sense that there has been a shift there?
Yeah, there are shifts over the years. And at the moment, there's a tension there. I think it's fueled by social media, to be honest, as well. So, yeah, over the years, we'll say there was quite a lot of, just when we were, that euro changed and, you know, the borders came down, I think a lot of people came into the country. And at that point, I would have had a lot more racism and people spitting at me and calling me names like, call me a packy or whatever. Or
have you been spat at? Have you actually been spat at on the street?
On the street, spat at, told to go home where I came from, told to get to the end of the line and the chipper, you know. So you don't, I mean, it's
you're saying that quite almost flippantly there, Sinead, but
look,
I think anyone would find that. I know, but
no,
I can't imagine being spat at and what that would do to you.
I'm sorry if it sounds flippant.
I'm holding back tears.
So I'm trying to say it with a smile on my face. So, yeah.
No, I'm admiring. I don't mean to be saying it sounds flippant, but I'm saying you seem to have taken it very, you know, you seem to have taken it in your stride because of the way you're easily able to. But that must be the most traumatic thing to happen to. I can't imagine it.
It's just a bit shocking. But you know that it's really sometimes, you know, how do I explain it? There are no excuses for people. And sometimes some of it does come out of drunkenness. But there's a subtle thing there for people who just haven't had exposure. And I think that there is a need, for example, for the Department of Justice now. Irish culture doesn't really know how to handle people of colour or, you know, and the other ethnicities coming into the country. They just don't really know. It's not really a badness in people sometimes. It's just kind of, ignorance is a strong word, but yeah, just lack of exposure is the word I use. And I'd love to see more campaigns coming in which were positive and not just saying, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that, and, you know, but just kind of listening to where people are coming from who have concerns, like, and who don't, you know, and having, you know, people just connect. I do see some of it you know, kind of like dance, you know, I've seen they've been organizing some dance projects where, you know, people will show how to do the African dancing and anyone can join in. Or we had a local event here in Scariff in County Clare where they just invited people to come and cook foods together. And we had all foods from different ethnicities. So positive things like that, where you just get a chance to talk to people, have been helpful over the years. But back to your question, yes, there is a difference right now. There's a tension. There's definitely a tension I feel.
What do you put that down to, Sinead?
Oh, it's just people, lack of exposure, people being aware, social media, this, you know, people don't really know how to react to, you know, the homelessness crisis coupled with people coming into the country and receiving a place to direct provision, I suppose, from the government. So that is definitely creating a tension. And, you know, there's a group of, a small group of extreme right-wing people probably, plus people who don't fully understand that or just maybe consider that, you know, it's nobody's fault. It's not the people on the street's fault. It's not the people who are coming into the country's fault. And they just don't quite know how to be. Yes. We don't quite know how to integrate with the other cultures yet. And they certainly won't quite know how to integrate with us yet either. So I feel that the Department of Justice has a role to play.
But when you say the
integration,
just be specific. And when you say you feel that tensions have risen or are higher around this race issue, how has that manifested itself? Apart from, I think, social media, I think anyone goes on Twitter for 10 minutes would be astonished at some of the rhetoric that is spread on that platform. But I'm saying in real life, do you get a sense? Do you encounter any of that kind of rhetoric, you know, in real life?
Well, yeah, I was at, I mean, I spoke about this on Live Line before. I was actually at Achill Island when I, you know, I saw the protests there. I haven't had it on the street. I think people are a little bit afraid, to bring it up directly. But I think there are conversations that just need to be had. The funny thing is, I was saying to one of your researchers there, I would have had a lot of conversations over the years about where I'm from, and people would be like, where are you from? No, you're not Irish, you know. And I'd be like, oh, I'm actually Irish, yep. It's just brown people can be Irish too. But these, funny enough, lately, people haven't been asking me where I'm from, which is, you know, they've been asking me all my life, but just that last, you know, 2 months, 6 months or something, people haven't been asking me where I'm from because I think they're kind of afraid that they'll be seen as racist. You know, it's funny.
The tension is on all sides of this now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I just feel, you know, there is a need for intervention and to not just dismiss. Now, I am not making any excuses for anything that's been said, you know, and there's a lot of it out there that is, you know, horrible. But also to be a little allowing for the lack of exposure and to try to do something about that so that people can find a way to integrate, for the new culture to integrate with both ways, we'll say, you know.
Okay. Sinead Sheehan, thank you for that.